This is Rethinking. We're back.
Hey, how are you, Josh?
Welcome back, Zach. Well, my name's Josh, as always, here with Zach.
Hi.
Let's get settled back into the rhythm here. The Rethinking podcast is back. I am exactly at the same point in my life that I have been. And Zach, now you're a megachurch pastor.
Something like that.
Yeah, congratulations. So we'll do a quick little one-shot here before we get back into recording our normal, amazing, thought-provoking, philosophical...
Exhilarating
podcasts. Zach, tell us what's been going on with you, man.
Well, I didn't know how long it was going to take me to settle in a completely new place and all that stuff. I feel like we're still settling in. Like, just last weekend, I painted a bathroom. Tomorrow on my to-do list is to paint another room. I'm still painting rooms.
You know, I'm assuming that you painted a bathroom, like, in your house, right? You didn't just paint a gas station bathroom in Grand Rapids somewhere?
Yes. Sometimes, like, with three little boys running around the house, you know, it feels like it could be a gas station bathroom, though.
That was your community project. Like, all right, guys, hey, I'm here in Michigan. I'm just going to paint a bathroom at a Texaco.
Cover up all the writing on the walls.
Yeah, cover up all the phone numbers.
So, you know, I'm still getting settled in. And then I was out of town, you know, out of the country for a few weeks there. And so, you know, some of the home projects and just different things, I feel like I'm still trying to readjust back to normal life after that too. So, but it's good to be getting back into some of my rhythms and, you know, and us recording and turning out pods and stuff is part of that rhythm of life that I want to reestablish here, you know.
Yeah.
This move and stuff. So I'm glad to be back. I'm still working on school. Still working on business stuff. Still doing the church work as well. So
yeah, you were
all those things at once.
You were just recently sent to the Middle East with your mercenary company, right? I mean, I know you said that you were going there on some sort of Holy Land mission, but I mean, Zach, you know, I got to ambush you with this question now that I've got you recorded. It's a front, wasn't it? You were sent there under the cover of and guise of being a student to be a special forces operative in the Middle East for 3 weeks, right?
That's so funny. It's funny because I joke about that with Aaliyah. I'm like, you know, why do you think I, you know, leave the country every, you know, 6 or 8 months, you know?
Yeah.
I've got to, you know, go do a special mission. And I'll pretend. I like to act like I'm, like, my life is a movie, like a film or something, you know. Sometimes it makes me feel cool. And when I'm traveling, sometimes I'll do that. It might sound stupid, but I'll just pretend that, like, I'm me, but I'm not me, you know, like there's some nefarious plan or something that I'm working on.
Yeah. Staff Sergeant Zach Killmaster. You need, like, how can we make Zachary Hamilton into just a really good action movie protagonist name? It's gotta have, like, a double entendre in there somewhere. I mean, like, James Bond isn't exactly sexual, but James Bond, you have to admit, that's a powerful, powerful action movie name, right? You know, like, or like Vin Diesel. Like, that guy's real name has to be Cornelius or something, but Vin Diesel.
How about Zeke David?
Oh, Zeke David. Oh, that's a good one. A little close to Keith David, and you are way too white. What about instead of Hamilton, you stick with the H, Zeke Harbinger? Yeah, Zeke, Master Sergeant Zeke Harbinger of not even like Delta Force, but like something higher, like Omega Force. They answer directly to the president, and make their enemies answer to God. I think we got something to pitch.
Oh my! You know, it was interesting going through a number of security checkpoints and stuff in different countries. It always is. And when I was coming from Jordan into Israel, you know, sometimes Americans talk about how the Israeli checkpoints, you tend to get harassed and things like that. But I didn't really have any issues going through. And
it was the beard.
Well, one guy, young guy, you know, that was security officer there was trying to speak to me in modern Hebrew, and I had to be like, "Yeah, I'm sorry, I'm stupid, I only know English." I was, you know, Jewish or Israeli or whatever.
What kind of look did he give you when he realized that you weren't one of God's chosen?
It was mostly just a smirk and smile.
Yeah, he just when he realized you weren't one of the 144,000, he was like, "Oh, this fucking guy." Or whatever the Hebrew equivalent is. I don't speak modern Hebrew either, but they have to have like some equivalent, like, you know, of that. I'm not going to say it again because I know I got to tone down the
PG-13. We only can have one F word per podcast.
Oh God, that was such a smart moment in Be Cool. You remember the movie Be Cool with Travolta?
No.
Is the sequel to Get Shorty. It was
gotcha.
Yeah, I think Gary Gray directed it, but at the very beginning of the movie's rated PG-13. At the very beginning of the movie, they're talking about the movie industry and how corrupt it is in character, Travolta's character is. And he goes, "You know, did you know that in order to get the PG-13 rating, you can only say the F word once in a movie? You know what I say to that?" And then he just gives the hard F, and it's like, "F that." And then they don't say it the rest of the movie, despite all of the debauchery and everything going on in the rest of the movie. And they get their PG-13 rating basically by spitting in the face of the MPAA or whatever it is at the very beginning of the movie. That's great. Great writing. So you know, in the interest of what's the word I'm looking for? Transparency. I was going to say complacency, and I hope not, but
the equivalent.
Yeah. In the interest of transparency, one of the things that we discussed during your move, because you are, you know, in a much more official capacity with an American Christian church now, mm-hmm. is you know, trying to broaden the scope of the podcast a little bit, or broaden the appeal of it. And so one of the things that I'm going to be working very hard to do is make my swear words at least easily accessible for me in Audacity, so that I can bleep them so that we can release a safer word version of this pod. I gotta go on
church.
Yeah, so well, I don't know if I mean which church, because I don't know if we're gonna have a safe for church. We hit a lot of topics that aren't safe for church in America. Maybe some of the more enlightened folks, I guess. So how are you settling into your new role? Is that working out for you? I mean, obviously it is, but like, what are the unique things that you're finding versus your previous projects? In the church, in the realm of Jesus, were a lot more freeform, it feels like.
Sure. Yeah. Well, I mean, I think that there's one major difference is that, you know, a lot of my previous work has been in smaller, with smaller, you know, groups of people, you know, that I was either instrumental in helping to organize or, you know, most churches in the United States are 100 people or less, you know, average weekly attendance. And so this church is, you know, significantly bigger than that.
It meets at the Palace at Auburn Hills.
Yeah. It's, you know, like, let's just say, like, if everyone showed up on the same Sunday, you know, we're talking like 1,000 people. I think at the Easter services that we had a couple weeks back, you know, there was like 1,300 people. You know, throughout the day that came and attended. So, there's, you know, some critical mass here, you know, like there's, a larger volunteer kind of workforce to work with and to, you know, to organize. And so, you know, theoretically you should be able to get more things done and have more, diversity of work, and opportunities for volunteers to serve. Because there's just more people, you know, cooperating together financially, just practically, in their service. So, you know, that has been you know, a unique experience for me, a new opportunity. It's kind of shifting from, like, you know, to use your language, in more of a free form approach with smaller groups of people, to kind of having to work within the context of a different organizational pace, you know, versus my individual pace, and like, hey, let's just do that or let's do this. And, you know, the decision making is like whoever's in the room at the moment, you know, versus just, you know, working within the context of a larger organization. But, you know, what's been unique also is that a lot of the things that I am good at or that I can help with this particular church, while it's bigger and more established, still needs help with a lot of the things that I can do. So I can see how
been fixing a lot of Wi-Fi. Have you?
Yeah.
You've been resetting a lot of routers. been getting some projectors to work.
Actually just stacking chairs and unstacking chairs and shuffles around, you know.
I'm sorry, but when you said that, just the kind of the way you said it, the first thing I thought of immediately was, man, the staff at that church is old and they did not know how to work the projector. they've been cycling 14-year-olds in and out from the youth group to figure out how to run that thing.
No, you know what? Actually, this church is, so the staff, you know, the people I work directly with, you know, most of them are, you know, early 40s and younger.
Oh, wow.
But, you know, there is a, you know, probably the major demographic within the church is like the, what would we say, the builder generation? No, the boomer generation, right? Which is like 40s, 50s right now. Right.
What? I think the boomers are a little older than that now.
A little older. Well, whatever that gen is, that Gen X now or something?
Yeah, you'd be shocked to know that Gen Xers are in their 40s and 50s now.
Okay, got it. So is that, you know, that is kind of the major demographic within the church. So, you know, the church wants to attract, you know, a younger target audience, but also, you know, the majority of people that whatever this church has done in the past and what we're doing currently, you know, it speaks to, you know, Gen Xers. What's interesting, we can see, you know, Facebook on our Facebook page for the organization, Facebook gives us results of, like, you know, different posts that are posted. So if like a 1 minute clip of pastor sermon or something is shown on Facebook, it'll say, you know, your video is popular with women between the ages of, you know, 40 and 55 or something. And we just are always joking about that.
It's shout hilarious. Out Cambridge Analytica.
Yeah.
That's, yep.
It's funny.
Russian interference in the church organizations of Northern Michigan.
It's funny to say to the lead pastor, like, hey, did you see that your video is popular with women between the ages of 40 and 55? You know, and then a video goes up of somebody else and it's like popular between the ages or with women between the ages of 25 and 35, you know?
Yeah. You should just do dueling sermons, you know, just have a sermon 1 week and it's why husbands should be good to their wives, a Bible perspective. And the next one, why wives should be good to their husbands, a Bible perspective. see how firmly the lines are drawn.
Oh, man. Crazy. So, you know, I mean, just this has been a neat experience for me so far, just because I'm able to work with a lot of different people who all are, you know, working out there in the real world. They have families, so all of that is fun for me, just developing people to go, you know, to become a better version of themselves.
So I'm
working with people on their personality type, kind of the way God's designed them, and having a better, you know, understanding of who they are, what their default behaviors are. And then also thinking about how to leverage that to be a benefit and a blessing to others, and looking at, you know, just kind of, you know, how they're gifted, what their gifts are, how they can create value for others and community, things like that. So, you know, I'm having like individual meetings with lots of people and just kind of encouraging them, developing them. That's been really fun for me. I enjoy doing that. It's like kind of like a reverse counseling session.
So neat. Instead
of like like working on, you know, all the past, you know, hurts and, you know, wounds and issues in their life. It's more about thinking about what's possible and what kind of potential they have to be a better version of themselves and stuff. So it's looking forward into the future.
So, you know, I'm not going to try and get you fired yet. I'm going to stretch that out over the course of many podcasts. I'm just going to try and ambush you with just try and get you to say things and then sound clip them onto your Facebook, your just church's Facebook page.
Slow burn.
Yeah. Well, see, like, I'm like a reporter in the White House press pool. I'm just trying to get you to slip up. you know, we have over the course of, you know, 1.5, 2 seasons of the podcast, really dug into organized religion in the West, specifically in America, because that's kind of what we have experience with, right?
Yeah, we've deconstructed that to a certain degree.
Yeah, deconstructed some days gently with, you know, just, you know, picking apart brick by brick, and some days dropping bombs. And so I guess the one question that I want to ask up front, just in your short experience so far, is how actively do you see church leadership? You don't even have to say your church leadership, but just in your interacting with religious organizations, how actively do you see them recognizing and engaging the types of pitfalls that we've discussed on the podcast? Are these things that church leadership seem to be aware of and taking action against, or are you finding them concerned with other things? Do you see where I'm going with that?
Yeah, I think that, you know, there's still a culture within church to, you know, that's built around it's built around gatherings.
Mm-hmm.
It's built around, you know, popular music. It's built around,
did you do air quotes when you said popular there, or did you do air quotes around the music part?
Popular within the subculture, I should say.
I'm just being a dick. Continue.
it's built around, you know, part of the value system is TED Talk type experiences, you know.
Yeah.
It's built around being very, it is like catering to the visitor and to the seeker. And I mean, if you were to go on, you know, practically any website or Facebook page of evangelical churches in the U.S. that, you know, have a, like an average weekly attendance of say 1,000, 2,000 or more people, you're going to see a lot of the same things. So like these churches that are medium sized and large sized churches in the U.S. that are evangelical churches are in a sense borrowing from one another, and creating their own sort of culture, that's hard to replicate at the lower levels or in a smaller context or using a more simpler model. So for example, you know, just very practically, like the kind of fonts that are used in marketing and advertising collateral and materials, the the types of things that you would see in photos that, you know, are part of like Facebook posts and things like that, the songs that are being sung, and the production that goes behind them, you know, on a Sunday morning or, you know, on a Friday night or a Thursday night or a Saturday night, or, you know, a lot of these churches have multiple services throughout the week, and, you know, having just a little bit of exposure to that here where I'm at in my current context, like how much work goes into planning 2 services on a Sunday morning. Like some churches are doing, you know, 5+ services a week, you know, where the gathering is like consists of like hundreds of people, sometimes thousands of people at a time, in different venues. Some of that's being Facebook Live recorded, you know, there's all of this production that goes into it. And, you know, I guess part of my critique is I still feel, honestly, if I'm honest with you or anybody that would be listening.
Hi, Mom.
Hey, Mom. I still feel like a little bit of an outsider to that world, you know? I mean, not a little bit. I still feel like an outsider. I feel like I'm incarnating into that culture, for the purpose of, you know, being subversive, if that makes any sense. So, you know, like, I don't, you know, it's not as much part of my personal value system to put on a giant production and see how many people, you know, I can be part of getting into a room, you know, and making them feel great, you know?
Yeah.
That's still not a high priority on my value system, but I do see how that can be leveraged for a larger purpose or larger purposes, if that makes sense. So,
well, we discussed, we in our mega church pod, we discussed that, and kind of the conclusion that I personally came to was that mega churches are far from ideal, but keeping giving some believers, from the perspective of your faith, obviously, giving some believers the opportunity to access that milk stage, you know, of belief is better than them never having access to it at all. Yeah. You know, so it's like, you know, it's like, you know, I don't know, UNICEF dropping rice and beans on people. Like, yeah, rice and beans isn't exactly a great meal, but it's better than nothing. So, you know, so I can see how, from your perspective, you could see, hey, that's not my purpose, or that's not necessarily ideal to me as far as the church's role. But I can also appreciate the value of it, whatever value there is, enough to work with the people who are working to accomplish that.
Yeah. So a couple things. Yeah. One is, like, part of the value is it reaches people. It brings people in, you know, and gets them at least into the door. And it's an entry point is the way I see it. So then there's a critical mass of people that somebody like me can work with, you know.
It's like coupons.
What's that?
It's like coupons. Coupons get people in the door.
There you go.
It's like free coffee and donuts at a car dealership. Or at a church, for that matter.
At a church, exactly.
Similar to a car dealership. At a
church. That's funny. So the other thing is, in this, to make the analogy more accurate, it would be less like dropping rice and beans and more like dropping, like, steak and baked potatoes. Like, I mean, it's like quality and it's excellent, you know, like the way that it's done. And there's a lot of work that goes into it. But, like, you know, at some point you have to ask the question, like, you know, are these people really benefiting from the steak and baked potatoes? What if they could grow their own potatoes, you know?
That's fair. But, I mean, let's be honest. It's the military dropping the steak and baked potatoes. And you and I have eaten military cooked steak before. So let's not pretend like
Except
this is
you were in the Army and I was in the Air Force, and the chow hall was like, I mean, it was like Golden Corral, but, you know, like gourmet.
Yeah. See, our chow halls were like Golden Corral, except the floor of a Golden Corral where just all of the food dropped by the rampaging hordes of children is left over. Hashtag Golden Corral. Shout out Golden Corral.
One of our sponsors.
One of our not sponsors. Look, if Jeff Foxworthy could make Golden Corral commercials at this point in his career, the Damn It Rethinking podcast has a place at the table.
Shout out Jeff Foxworthy, one of our future guests.
Oh, God. So, but that's a really good, candid answer from you about that, kind of that subject or that aspect of the evangelical culture, the like attractional type deal. I think that it's good to see that you kind of still have that perspective, or that you're even willing to speak that perspective into being, because I feel like church jobs, since churches are working to work within the culture now so much instead of changing the culture. I mean, you see it with religious media. Media has gotten to the point where they want it to be short. They want it to be quick. The TED Talk thing, like you were talking about. Here's an excerpt from our pastor's recent series on blah. Here's a video of us singing blah. And, you know, so the churches are seeking to work within the type of media that people are consuming now, rather than changing the culture surrounding the way that people experience media. Does that make sense? Are you smelling what I'm stepping there?
Yeah, it does. Now, here's the danger is because there used to be more of a mindset probably in the late 70s, early 80s within evangelical churches. It was like a movement to change the culture.
Yeah.
And now the question was, you know, or I get not the question, the conflict was in what are we changing the culture to look like or to be, right? Because what happened was is evangelicals put themselves in positions of power and influence, and also befriended people who were in power and influence already, and they changed the culture or attempted to change the culture. I guess it could be argued whether they were successful or not, to be more like it themselves, you know, like their own values were then applied across the landscape, you know, whether people wanted to, share those values or not. So, you know, conservative values became a thing that was impressed upon people who maybe didn't, you know, share those values. So there's a sense in which, you know, working within the culture, there's, you know, negative pros and cons to that. Trying to change the culture, there's pros and cons to that. And I guess where I kind of lean to, and this is becoming more clarified kind of like within my own beliefs and practices, is like I see value in doing in both of those approaches. What I would love to see and be a part of more is how do we create culture? So not just change the culture to be more like us and what we value, and not just work within culture, because I like doing that too. But how do we create like a totally new culture that people
will be drawn to?
Are attracted to, because there, you know, there's a sense in which being attractional is a good thing.
Yeah. But from a cultural perspective, not from a spectacle perspective, right?
Yeah, not from a perspective where we think where that's the end result is just attracting people. That if that is a means to a different end or a more important end, in my opinion, then I see the value in that. But if that is the end result, is just to attract people and to sort of build our own empire, you know what I mean? That people flock to and come and live within, and to build our own hierarchy, you know, of authority and things like that, then, you know, then that's not as interesting to me.
Well, and part of the danger there too is, like you said, you know, the evangelical movement sought to change a culture, or create a culture, change the culture to something, but you know, my dad, with whom I differ politically significantly, but from a moral perspective, we share a common sense in morality, right? Mm-hmm. Significant political differences, but common moral beliefs. Mm-hmm. And he always said, association breeds assimilation, which, you know, I always took to mean that if you are with somebody and they are not changing to be more like you, then you are changing to be more like them.
Yeah.
You know, and so what it seems to have happened with the evangelical movement is as they have sought to reach people within the culture, they have found themselves becoming more secular, or becoming part of or engulfed in the culture that they were trying to change. But it feels like they've just lost part of what made that movement distinct. And as you have the increased involvement of evangelicals in politics and world affairs, and also them losing some of their distinction or some of the things that made them distinct among other groups, you know, the values, the distinct culture of the Western church, then the political side gets really troubling. And we're not going to go too deep into that because I think that's something that we're going to broach, you know, if not in the next pod, within a couple of pods. But just thoughts. I'm really happy to hear that you're still subversive is such a harsh term, I think, for people who don't really appreciate counterculture in general. But you know, I'm glad to hear that you're maintaining some of your you still got some black leather in your wardrobe, or you know, some white V-neck shirts.
Which I haven't. I only wear them under long sleeve shirts right now until the weather finally warms up.
Oh, you sell out! You sell out!
It's too cold to wear just a short sleeve shirt here.
You just got. You should just wear a really big scarf. Go for the Lenny Kravitz. just a short sleeve V-neck and a really, really, really obnoxiously large scarf. But all right, so I think that's good enough to wrap up. You know, any final thoughts on the changes? You know, change in moving the family, new job. You know, anything? You know, any final thought to add on that?
No, it's all been good. Glad to be back on here with you chatting.
Yeah, excellent. Me too. Me too. Hashtag me too.
Hashtag us three.
Hashtag us. We're gonna get in trouble. All right, so yeah, let's go ahead and close this up, and hopefully we'll be posting this right alongside a new pod, so we'll just roll right into the next pod.